Good evening, everybody. That was fast. we are indeed back. We are indeed live and back and all that stuff. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. We are the back. in what is a light holiday special, but not really.
Not a holiday special, because the last time we did a holiday special, no one watched
That's
it.
That's true,
So yes. There is nothing to do with Christmas in this stream whatsoever, except from Merry Christmas.
Yes, except temporally, yes.
it's like Die Hard.
For those of you wondering about the weather, it has been dire. It's just been cold. I mean, 5 degrees and drizzling, so...
That wind the other night was horrendous. But I think we were experiencing a major storm. Because there was some serious Overton window shifts last week.
that's right.
Someone pester and remind me to do this at some point. And I suppose it's not entirely spoiling it. We do need to do like a weekly Overton like weather report.
The Overton format, yes. Yeah. The Overton the Overton
window forecast.
Yeah, the Overton forecast. That's it. Yes. I'm so brain dead because Christmas. I forgot the word forecast, but that shan't happen again. Today we'll hopefully not be gloating too much, but really we'll be going over some of the political predictions we've made, what it means for the future, and generally rounding out, like we said, how to exist in the political future. How do you use what we know and use what we're seeing to exist, you know, forward in the paradigm? One of the things that people got very annoyed with us was how vociferously we talked about the fact that the woke paradigm was going away. It is now gone.
Yes.
It is very, very clear. We had that narrative. People have grieved it. It is now gone.
I just want to mention there, someone said, please don't get yeeted again. We're not reading from that dangerous, dangerous website.
Yeah, BBC Bite Size. I can't believe a clip of us reading BBC Bite Size.
But that stream from a few weeks ago, which you put quite a lot of effort into in making these slides for, can be found on Odyssey if you haven't already seen it. So if you want to go and watch it over there, feel free to. But don't do that now because you're watching this.
Of course, I'll just put it in the live chat for people on the replay. But yes, we've got there's been a lot of political paradigm shifts this year. Most of which I will say that we did at least partially predict.
I think before we get into the slightly humble bragging portion of the stream, we should probably mention though that if you enjoy the stuff that we are making on here and want to sort of support it in any way that you can feel free to give us money and we will use it on pints.
Yes, we will. You can donate via, of course, YouTube's own monetization. We are still fully monetized somehow.
You can be a member of the channel if you're one of those very cool people. Or you can give money directly through the Ko-fi if you don't want to pay the YouTube tax. Or if it takes your fancy, you can also subscribe to the Substack.
Yes.
Of which the back end appears to be entirely broken. If there's any sort of Substack savants out there, let us know how it's working for you.
It won't let me upload audio properly, but we'll see what happens there. Yeah. Hello to Shystrake, hello to S. Smith, and our other members as well. I don't thank those guys enough. Thank you to all our members.
Our initiates.
Yeah, our initiates. Those memberships do add up and they do really help out.
Alphabet Cat's going to get himself banned from the chat there. Pints of Theakston's, you guys need to try other real ales. What do you mean other real ales? Theakston's Dark Mild is the only real ale.
Yeah. All other ales are fake. We're declaring them fake.
Yes.
Those are fake ales, not real ales.
But anyway, we are of course not speaking to you from the 23rd of December 2024. I think first we want to speak to you from around... what was it, the 7th or the 11th of January this year? That I think one of the first sort of items that we want to look at this evening.
Well, this is your 14th, yes. Yes, this is your 2024 survival guide for UK distance that you wrote as your cap-off to last year.
Mm.
This is from January 2024, so it is your kind of cap-off from the beginning of this year, I will say, sorry. But it is something you kind of wrote last year. You didn't write it in a few days. But it's amazing how much it has just rumbled on. Mm. We are definitely on a set political track now in what you keep referring to as the neo-neocon era we're moving into.
Let's just go to like the third paragraph here. Yes. It has become an eminently obvious fact that the Conservative Party in the UK is set to lose the next election. Whenever that may come this year, 13 years of rule has seen them do nothing but attack British national identity by immigration, by corrupt cultural messaging, and setting the stage for British identity to be no more than a legal category. Be under no illusion, what it means to be British is, and will continue to remain, under attack, no matter who is in charge.
Yes.
I mean, the whole focus in here, really in that essay in a large part, and I think that slide of Boris and Hunt is, not Hunt, sorry, Gove, is very apt.
Yes.
Is that the conservative sort of elites, and I'm not calling them conservative because they have conservative values other than conserving their own positions in power, but as a name to catch them all, and the financiers around them and the high-level politicians, have spent the last year essentially using this article in a way as a playbook for how to keep themselves relevant.
Well, no, it's very obvious from the documents they write and the people that are involved and the things that they've done in the past where this is going. We spoke, and we always use Matthew Goodwin as like a yardstick of one of these de-radicalisation experts who's been brought into the heart of quote-unquote, radical right-wing politics or, right-edge or beyond the Tories, in quotes, narratively, what has coalesced itself into the reform sphere. And what we guessed, very rightly, was that, you're right, the Conservative Party, its main job is to survive its time in the wilderness and to try and harness and possibly merge with this new political energy. But as we've seen, Mr. Farage has positioned himself very much in the quote-unquote centre, and it really is living up to everything we said would happen.
Yes, and I think he's the perfect example of this sort of linguistic and value-derived sort of snake. He's willing to look like a neoliberal to sort of leftists that are friendly with our ideas. He's willing to look like a capitalist to all the libertarians. He's willing to look sort of on the face as if he might say ethno-nationalist stuff to people on the far right. And this is part, I think, of their whole strategy, is to cover all bases. I talk about Goodwin here. He's a lifelong researcher of extremism who's recently become a darling of the conservative ruling class, appointed as a government advisor in September of 2022 by none other than Liz Truss, just a handful of days prior to her short-lived stint as Prime Minister. To me, Goodwin is being brought fully into the fold, a regular in GB News, engaging in polling that solidifies centre-right positions, appearing on New Culture Forum to speak to high society, writing in the spots of the Sun to speak to the low, and even appearing on Lotus Eaters in an attempt to speak directly to us. Either Matthew himself, or some agent of his, is determined to make sure that him and everyone that follows his model sticks around.
Yes, we've seen many of the people we've singled out, their stars only rise, really, because they represent the interests of the new faction of the elite, but it is not a different faction. Mm. It is merely, as we'll explain, a very, very small disagreement, or a very small kind of I want to play with the quote-unquote levers of power spat. It is a very much an inter-elite spat, and one over a very narrow set of framings. What is actually happening, as we always tell people, the agenda does not change. Thank you, Spascus Autisticus, for gifting 5 memberships. That's excellent. Merry Christmas to you too. Thank you to Lamented Guy for the $5 with a super sticker. I think you're the only person who ever uses those, so thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to the Shy Strike for the £5. Merry Christmas, the message from James Linsick. The choose the canary in every free society's coal mine. And of course, we do love the nation of Israel.
Oh, undeniably.
Undeniably.
And I think maybe if we're to point out one other part in this article, is I want to get to the section on crowding out, which...
You should probably arrange this beforehand.
I was going to go on to the next paragraph.
Okay.
Right. One aspect and one thing I've found fundamentally important that people have picked up on this year is slop.
Yes.
People have tried to play with the definition of slop. They've tried to say it's sort of innocent. But I think specifically on Twitter, more than anywhere else, or Zitter, or whatever the fuck we call it nowadays, slop has become so pervasive that people cannot look at it as anything but pernicious.
Yes.
They can't see it as something that doesn't have some sort of...
We'll get the trough out very quickly.
Yes, some sort of motive behind it. We are not all just seeing this stuff on our phones, on our computers, on YouTube and everywhere else for no reason.
Yes.
And crowding out by filling your screen with slop becomes such an important part of how you control framing and you control conversation. And can we think of an example any stronger than that than the follow-on since October 7th, 2023? An even more intense version of this crowding out strategy was carried out in the weeks after the October 7th attack by Hamas. And we could also say, in the anniversary of such, they have still continued to act in the name of the hostages and the victims and the aggressors. But instead of Islam being discussed as its own issue, or the security of Britons being considered sans the framing gymnastics of media elites, one found constant discussion of the threat Hamas and Hamas sympathisers posed to the Jewish population in Britain. Furthermore, at a time when the critical energy surrounding multiculturalism was at a recent high, the conversation was switched into how a multiracial Britain has failed its Jewish population, not its own. It was only with the help of this astroturfed, anti-woke network that such narrative dominance was possible even within explicitly right-wing spaces like ours. The likes of Douglas Murray, young GB news reporters like Charlie Peters, or Turning Point UK puppet Darren Grimes being sent off to Tel Aviv to help cement this as a real issue. Nothing will make the average man turn a blind eye to obnoxious and corrupt anti-Semitism campaigns like a torrent of war footage, detailed stories of the horrors of Hamas attacks, and live footage of young plucky British reporters sheltering amid shelling.
We've had a year of just this absolutely relentless narrative surrounding the Middle East, Israel, and it as the current thing.
But I think what's really, I suppose, dare I say, I may be a little white-pilled, is that there are enough folk out there absorbing lessons about this from us, from AA, and from a selected few other people, and they really are actually starting to notice properly. Not only do they recognise this crowding out happening, and October 7th being such an important event, but they themselves are able to identify wider assets in that network.
Well, things from the woke era, in quotes, have reset.
Yes.
What we've seen is that Trump has saved American democracy, and in doing so, he has caused millions of Americans to buy back into the process, in quotes, as genuine and sacred. It is almost like the fulfillment...
Stop the steal! It is... Save the integrity of the American system!
It is almost like the fulfillment of the QAnon Patriots in Control narrative. We have a storyline where the process, the sacred process of American democracy is called into doubt. And Trump's mission is not to supersede the current order. It is not even to change the current order. It is to save it.
To reinforce it.
Yes.
By a rear guard action.
We now have millions of Americans who previously were doubtful of the democratic system, who are elated and now believe that the American political system is still for them. And that is a huge problem. The folding back in of all of these people has been a huge success. It's a great example of the harnessing of distant energy. Trump created all this distant energy in both 2016 and 2024. People fell for it again. And quite honestly, I think that the American edge of the quote-unquote distant right are some of the stupidest people you will ever meet because they campaigned for Donald Trump. And they did so through an incrementalist, we want 0.5% less taxes, guys. Anyone who carried water for Donald Trump is a fool.
Yes.
And will be remembered as a fool. Like all the people who carried water for George W. Bush because, quote-unquote, we have to beat the Democrats. And that's really how I think a lot of these people will be discredited in the future, is when Trump becomes, at the end of his next term, just another Republican politician with just another set of broken Republican promises, then those who were on the edge of the dissident sphere, in quotes, who rallied around him will look like complete and utter retards.
And do you know what this tells me more than anything else, really? is that the regime is not terrified of far-right ideas.
No.
It's terrified of far-right organization independent of itself.
The ideas don't scare it, yes.
I think that's why its fundamental problem isn't with radicalization. It's with apathy, really. How much harder is it to get someone to not care about a political issue, either left or right orientated, than it is to make them care about it more in the direction that they're already going?
Yes.
And in a sense, this is what this has done. We have had the Trump campaign at one end be Wignat posters on whatever platform you're on, posting utter garbage about mass deportations and J.D. Vance is going to do this and whatever else.
Yes.
Meanwhile, the other end is a bunch of Jewish D-trans people running around on Twitter saying that the real problem with Germany is that they tried to make up for the Holocaust by importing too many people that hate Jews. So how can this big tent really function, which is one question, and two, if it isn't going to function, then what's the purpose of creating the big tent in the first place? It's almost as if capturing people and making them engaged in any idea is worth more than the ideas themselves, because apathy, to me, would seem to be the real threat.
Yes, it would. It would seem to be the people actually giving up. The big story that people didn't talk about at the last election, we'll talk about that stuff when we get to the Farage stuff, was the turnout. But this is the post you were talking about.
Mm.
This is Malapoet. I've screenshotted this in case I got... Yeah, I think blocky doesn't work the same anymore, does
it? No,
it doesn't. I feel like I'm in a future I don't quite understand.
Yes.
Here we go. Here are your newest I didn't leave the left left me crop. This is the far... The tent always has room for anyone picking America first.
Woo!
Woo! Universalism.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but this is actually like the most egregious tweet I think I've read in quite a considerable while.
Yes.
The chutzpah. Yes. I almost respect the boldness.
You can't agitate a man in a full stomach, yes. But welcome to your new crop of MAGA influencers.
Mm.
Welcome to democracy brain. This is what people being folded back in looks like.
Oh, you like long extended stories about how somebody's Hanukkah was ruined because they've now got a neo-vagina that wasn't properly built. Because that's your new right wing.
Well, the whole point is the establishment literally shakes hands and makes up. It's this. This is the arc. This is the return back to normal. This is the reset.
Mm.
This is what the narrative energy being fully consumed looks like. And people will sit there and go, oh, no, you're crazy. They didn't expect Trump. They didn't cycle Trump in.
I mean, Yez in the chat's trying to make a point here, but I don't think apathy is a threat to them at all. They want us to disengage and be complacent as we're replaced. Not at all. I think...
They need us to actively engage in the process.
Yeah. I am not a believer of democracy. I don't expect many people in the chat or reacting to whatever we're doing with this stuff to be believers in democracy either. However, I recognise that they need some level of consensus decision-making. And furthermore, they need momentum behind things. This is what our problem with supporting Trump, despite all his faults, has always been, is that we can't afford to give people who are our enemies that momentum.
Yes. It's also just, no, the apathy isn't what these people want. These people want you to be engaged in the process,
yes,
because it is their process. It doesn't matter if you're engaged it for or against, as long as you're engaged in it. That's why we call the Substack anti-politics. That's why we engage in what we engage in. That's why we try and grab people and shake them and tell them that electoral politics isn't real. No, the buy-in is what they want. The buy-in is exactly what they want. I mean, here we go. This is the next kind of slide I've got here, or the next little image, but there it is. Yeah, 2004, the year everyone re-bought into the electoral system.
Reform was going to smash the Tories, and it was all going to make a difference because we voted.
There is a political party for the politically homeless.
Yay!
Yay!
The apathy sponged up.
Finally, a political party that represents me. The Express, Nigel Farage's Reform UK wins yet another by-election as Labour loses control of a seat. Reform UK have won yet another local council. Again, this is how far we're down. And by the way, local councils are about to be made non-existent.
Yes.
They're about to just not exist anymore, as we'll get to. But this is the cope. This is the cope that we're dealing with, that everyone apart from an extremely small number of us right out here on the edge are talking about Nigel Farage moving the Overton window. Mm. They're talking about backing Farage.
Oh, sorry, he must have moved again there. I felt my waters quaking.
All of the policy soup that he's taking, by the way, directly just taking money from like the Tory party and Tory donors, by the way. At some point we'll put out like a maybe just a massive detailed amount of proof about how, like, who's taking what money from where. But that might be in the future. We'll see. For now, you know who you are and we know where your money's coming from. that's all I'll say. But again, here's GB News. It won't load because my block's blocking it.
Again, I would say is furthering on that crowding out strategy.
Yes.
It all becomes talk about Farage. It becomes talk about what Reform's doing. It becomes a conversation about, do you think Tommy Robinson should be part of Reform? Do you think Reform should support deportations for criminals?
Ooh.
You know, it's all these little safe, little boxed-in conversations that we can all have online and pretend we're involved, that we are changing the world.
We have a written affirmation here from Nigel Farage. On behalf of Reform MPs on this first anniversary of the appalling Hamas terrorist attack in Israel, we want to reiterate our support for the State of Israel. Thank you, Nigel, for that tasteful and politically neutral address there.
Yeah, and because we know what we know, we understand that just like the MAGA operation is a big tent to get people involved first and foremost,
yes,
the Reform far edge of the Tory GB News sphere that doesn't really have a catch-all to it yet, I mean, I would maybe dare say it's the ex-Brexit sphere.
Yes.
All that money comes from the same place, with the same objectives in mind. So the fact that you've got people who are funded by the same end of this, pretending they're at one end of the safer Reform and the other people are ethno-nationalists and there's all this broad spectrum in the middle, it's all fucking nonsense.
Well, you must remember as well that for most people, quote-unquote, on the right in Britain, Reform is still too much for them.
Mm.
We are the edge of the edge of the edge. People in online politics get a distorted view of how popular their opinions are.
Yes.
They get a distorted view of how many people think like them. People do not think like us, and they never will, and there's no way to convert them into thinking like us. And that's something that people cannot reconcile when we talk about politics. Most people are not capable of reading basic statistics. Most people are not capable of doing political analysis in any fashion, nor should they be. They're meant to be picking turnips, for Christ's sake.
Mm.
Overcomplicating people's lives is one of the problems with it. But you get here, you get GB News, which is, again, considered the far-flung edge if you're a polite muesli muncher in the southeast of England. You know, a lot of people read GB News, but they feel, or watch GB News, but feel a bit naughty about it. They think that that's their act of rebellion.
It's like picking up a copy of the Daily Star slyly on your way to the shops.
Yes. It's, you know, it's like, sometimes I pick up the Sun, but I don't let the wife see it.
Yeah.
She still thinks it's got boobs in it. Labour accused of running scared by Reform UK's Angela Rayner eyes up cancelling local elections. Insurging parties target. Well, this is also them running cover for New Britain. That's not the story.
Yes.
This is not the story. And as I flashed up on screen earlier, this is what we always say to people when they talk about like Nigel Farage. It's like, why do you think electoral politics, say with the Homeland Party?
Mm.
I mean, even Kenny Smith won the dirty fucking grass. I mean, the electoral politics isn't real.
Yes.
That's what it is. Electoral politics isn't real.
And the
running
same way
electoral
the stock,
process.
The stock market isn't real. Most professional sports is fixed to some degree.
Yes.
You know, these things that are viewed and engaged in by millions of people are not influenced and set definitely by the millions of people that engage in it.
No.
There is everything is set beforehand, or as much as can be. And then through the infinite powers of never-ending framing, there's always a way to argue out of it or get round it or... it becomes tedious to some degree.
It does. We talked about this to a very large degree. We almost talked, not talked it to death, but this stream has become a lot more relevant now that there's a whole Elon Musk donating to Reform possibly thing. Now that we're seeing the arm across the aisle, we're seeing the neocon resurgence in America be copied one for one in Britain. And Farage is the vehicle for that. Again, we talked about this, it's more than a year ago now. Well, October 2023.
That's why we need all these based black people with their British values to show you how degenerate white Brits are anti-British. Ooh.
Well, I will once again point to something I made in June of 2023. Good Lord, it's now a year and a half ago. But the Freedom Fries and Coronation Chicken was my, it's a strange name for an article, I know, it was my attempt to nod towards this political future. Because really what we have, and what I've talked about before, is political amnesia. The example I always use, and it's the one here, is the Iraq War. It's remembering the Iraq War. And it's a little quote from YouGov here, but though it has been controversial for over a decade, the invasion was actually popular at the time. In 2003, YouGov conducted 21 polls from March to December asking British people whether they thought the decision by the US and the UK to go to war was right or wrong. On average, 54 people said it was right. But 10 years later, 10 years of opposition is a long time, and many people now remember things differently. Now only 37% of the public say they believed military action against Saddam Hussein was right at the time, instead of the 54% recorded at the time. What we will see is that in 3 to 5 years, people will simply not recall the woke era. If you were to describe this political paradigm to them in the way that describing the neocon paradigm to people during the woke era, it elicited, no, that didn't happen. I mean, a lot of people think that things have shifted into unprecedented territory, but you've got to remember that, you know, radical Islam, in quotes, was the villain of the War on Terror arc. Mm. It is something that has been utilized before, and we're moving back to that footing. But fundamentally, people cannot learn the lessons from this because they have extreme political amnesia. And again, what I always use is Iraq, WMD, Iraq, a million people, you know, 1 million to 3 million people protesting in Britain doesn't make a difference. Yeah. It's one of the perfect examples that politics is simply a veneer.
God over the White March in Belgium.
Yes, yeah, I'll go watch our White March stream at any of those. But
I think in some regards as well, I previously have been apprehensive about the way we have gone about repeating ourselves. But I now realise you have to repeat yourself.
Constantly.
You have to repeat yourself day in, day out with the same sources, the same information, the same videos, the same clips, the same quotes. Because only then will anyone except the 0.1% of people actually begin to take on what you are saying on board. And they won't do so because they fundamentally understand. What they will do so, though, is pick up on, oh, well, these people have said Farage bad, Farage containment so many times that I might as well believe it.
Yes. Now,
I'm not a fan of that. I don't like the fact that that exists, or that's why people might listen to some of what we do. But it's fundamentally true.
It is.
And this is the game they play.
Yes. Unless you are constantly reinforcing someone's quote-unquote informational environment, they simply succumb to the water they're swimming in. That is, God, it's so fundamental, but it's something that people cannot get into their minds. You cannot red pill the normies. Oop, I'm afraid the back end's crashed there for a second. You cannot red pill the normies because they will forget a day later. They will simply forget that you red pilled them. In
you
quotes.
Cannot teach a dog a card trick.
No, well, you maybe a sufficiently smart enough dog. But I'll just do a quick thing here that I can't stand Farage and the brand of politics he represents. He's a backstop. Beg the native population to just, you know, to continue and one more election. That's what he designed this time.
This changes everything.
You know, you must remain engaged in the process, a process that is designed to destroy you. He represents the politics of, you know, the post-Brexit, just one more election while we see millions of migrants every year.
Can you not wait for like 5 years down the line where Farage turns around and goes, the people voted for Brexit. Now they can vote for me and Brexit will really happen.
We're going to get them in 2029.
Oh, aye.
Don't worry, guys.
First,
we'll
the council by-elections.
In
then
2029.
New Britain.
Well, what we've also seen is a footing in which the right, they're really trying to push this whole like woke right thing a little bit.
Yes.
It's they're trying to return to the idea of what I would call like the Colbert universe. They are trying to get back at the Jon Stewart universe.
Yes. Jon Stewart would be the epitome of this. The epitome. But as I've sort of noted here, I think, again, this is an important part of what happens once you have been crowded out.
Yes.
When you have been crowded out and you do not know who is who, and people don't know their arse from their elbow, have people then come in and try and divide your little group from inside itself with propaganda that is really from outside of it.
Well, a lot of people seem to be continuously surprised that Spiked Online is an arm of the Revolutionary Communist Party. Mm. But it is. And we did a whole stream on that, again, about a year ago. So 10 months ago, we did Revolutionary Communist Toryism, where we talk about this, again, at length. But people just don't remember. They see Spiked on the right, and it adds to the...
But they're for free speech, so yes, they're our friends.
It adds to the soup, the informational soup, the general kind of milieu, the hegemony of message. It is about just creating this. It doesn't matter if it makes sense. It doesn't matter if it's actually organically popular or not. It only matters that you create a massive amount of it, and it takes up space. But this is, after the riots, white identity politics burst to the surface. The radical politics of the new right is now impossible to ignore. They are just as pathetic and poisonous as the woke left. It's time to take them on, says...
And who's going to take them on? Nigel Farage, of course.
Inya Fulran Imyan. But Inya Fulran Imyan, who's... Oh, God. Let me reopen that. Sorry, I didn't actually open the Spiked article there, did I?
She works for the Equino product. Project or something, which is just like some equality NGO and podcast thing.
If I drew that, I'd be in trouble.
Yeah, I thought about this as soon as I thought that. I mean, I think that the portrait...
Oh, here we go. We may finally be recovering from the woke brain rot.
Fuck off, it's Lionel Shriver. But I think if I'd have drawn that picture of her, I would have got in trouble.
Yes.
Yes. So where are we going for this here? This is the paragraph that I picked out as well when looking at this.
This one?
Yes.
We'll go for the one above. A similar dynamic now appears to be at work on the right.
This is after she's talking about the left and the woke left separating and them being sensible.
Yes. Of mainstream conservatives to challenge far-right identitarian rhetoric risk allowing it to fester unchecked. For instance, claims that a multi-ethnic society is inherently destructive are not only factually incorrect, but also alienate people of goodwill who support cultural integration rather than segregation. This is what I mean. We are going to get basically every corner of the right, in quotes, turn round and go, you are the real racist if you don't believe in multicultural, multiracial Britain. Well, some are willing to take a stand, however. Reform leader Nigel Farage has been keen to draw a line between his party's populist politics and those of the identitarian right. His recent efforts to rebuff the radical identitarians have been criticised, unsurprisingly, by those who think the party should obsess over demographic change and stop saying mean things about Tommy Robinson.
Can I interject there for a moment?
Yes.
How much is this woman just showing her hand about the fact that fundamentally she either doesn't understand the people she's talking about, or really what they're trying to force in here is not any sort of truth, but a frame.
Yes, this is the
frame is the people who are too far right are also still Tommy Tards, which means they still love Israel, which means they're not necessarily anti-Semites, but then they might also be ethno-nationalists. So we still need to work on these people and reform them, as it were. And this is exactly, again, as I discussed in the first article of mine that we looked at earlier on, what Starmer did with the far left in his own party. And there is this continuous process of people on the centre-right getting friendly with us, adopting our ideas, you know, trying to speak like us, walk like us, and then when they're actually asked to act upon those ideas, they go, oh, well, we don't believe in all of this stuff. Those people that truly take this to the far limit are criminals and racists and they're anti-British. And just like Starmer turns around and goes to his own woke left base and says, no, you're not having what you want, we, as the quote-unquote woke right, we're not going to get what we want, are we?
No. Well, the point here, again, is that we have two arms of the Tory party, basically, or two arms of the edge of the Tory party arguing with itself. You have, effectively, once again, the debate between Cameronite compassionate conservatism and basic bitch American neoconservatism, which is what Farage represents. And you have this dialectic between them both that is really just, I would say, an argument between two groups.
Yes, and can I just cover the last little bit of text that's here as well? And just to further on that point, as A has been suggesting, possibly more or less esoterically than we have for a while, Farage is being made acceptable for the public image. He was on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, and everyone on Twitter got involved and voted for him and he was there.
Believe me or don't, but I've been directly told by two different people that Farage is being normalised deliberately by the BBC, quote-unquote, just in case.
Yes.
I've heard this from multiple sources now.
And this phrase at the end here would exemplify that.
Yeah.
The polls would suggest Farage was right to ignore these critics. Reform is polling at record highs. Ordinary people clearly don't spend their days worrying about the great replacement.
Thank you, revolutionary communist. Inyan Furam Iman. And thank you to Connor Tomlinson for his massive paragraph about how he doesn't actually believe in the identity of native British people. Very nice. I won't take my time to go over that, like, hand-wringing, stumbling apologetics.
One of these mates to talk about anyway. I mean, guess who's getting a brand new show on GB News?
It's Matt. It's Right Response himself, Matt Goodwin. Now you can have the
researcher from Hope Not Hate. I hope he's accredited as Hope Not Hate researcher, Matt Goodwin.
Hope Not Hate and Chatham House's Matthew Goodwin. Yes,
British Friends of Israel signatory Matt Goodwin,
former government advisor and member of the Child Poverty Commission, I believe. That was put into the
Social Mobility Commission. That was it. Yeah.
Yes. Former advisor to the Tory government, but apparently he's a dissident.
Yes, so GB News is having a shake-up. Yes. I could care less. What I concern myself with is we all know what that man is and what his intentions are. He is there because he gets to run around and speak to the money men and go, look, I'm going to speak to the big bad Nazis. I'm going to trick them all and you won't have to worry about them. Okay, now he's being broadcast into homes all across Britain, all across the world if you watch it on the internet. It must just be because the viewers like him. That must be it. But of course, I would imagine that Farage's public acceptability image and all of this will all interlink. We'll have more groups of people disavowed as scary ethno-nationalists and, they're anti-Semites and they're Hamas sympathisers. They smell a bit like leftists.
But it's obvious that the current thing is just the rebirth of the quote-unquote war on terror, but in an even more diluted format. What we have now, and I won't address the current thing with the Christmas market situation because it's not worth addressing on its own.
No.
I don't think it's worth addressing on its own at all. In fact, I wrote some notes about this in more of a general term because what you have when it comes to terrorism in terms of a narrative is that you have the complete adoption of hyper-reality.
Yes.
It's like Adam Curtis documentary. Terrorism is one of the things you have to worry about least day-to-day, a la immigrant populations. It really is. It's like being struck by lightning. Focus on terrorism solely is a driver of the same security state that does not want you to discuss deportations openly. The designation of terrorism is only state and media controlled, as we learned in Syria recently. Not designating most violence by non-native populations as terrorism creates a world of isolated incidents and bad actors, rather than discussions on proper or population-level crime, disorder, and decay.
And this helps create a false dialectic.
Yes.
What you have is right versus left. And in the West, this boils down to Zionist neocon factions that advocate for forever wars and sensible immigration and government, and an internationalist diaspora that's liberally social and argues for the same sensible wars, like Ukraine and, as you say, Kosovo here, but they want unlimited immigration. So what we end up really with is a compromise between the two. So we get immigration, forever wars, and some level of social liberalism.
Well, the quote-unquote terrorist attacks didn't stop happening over the last decade.
Well, Palantir stopped them all, don't you know?
Nothing has changed. What has changed is what is being zoomed in on. What we get now is we get the Zionist neocon faction to have their agenda be dominant. Mm. And what you get is you don't get either of these groups cycled out entirely. They change emphasis. The Bush era had the neocon emphasis. The Obama era had the internationalist emphasis. The Trump era still had the internationalist emphasis. And the fact that those two didn't gel was a problem for them narratively. Yes. That's why things got so wacky. We now have a narrative ascendancy of a Zionist neocon faction as a political faction that is sympathetic to them is arriving, and possibly arriving relatively soon in the UK. The UK is an interesting situation in that we have, even more so than America, abandoned the illusion of political change in many cases. Farage maybe needs to bring back the illusion of political change because many people are quite confused. I think one of the things we slightly got wrong, or we'll see when we get to a year in. My belief with the current Labour government is we'll get a year in and the taps will be turned on and people say, it was not as bad as you thought.
No.
Everything's fine. It wasn't as bad as the Tories are. And people will switch on that. A lot of people think I'm crazy for saying that. But seriously, they're going to start playing things can only get better when we're a year in there.
Well, no, we've already reached the stage where Starmer is running around saying immigration was not just an accident, it was a conspiracy, and it was neoliberal elites aligned with the Tory party that worked globally to bring millions of immigrants into Britain. That's pretty much true.
Yes, it is
true. And he
said
that in a manner that makes it sound as if it's all the fault of the Tories.
Well,
what that by extension does creates an image in everybody's head that everything that bad that happened in Britain for the last 13 years was all David Cameron, Boris Johnson and Rishi Sunak's fault, when really we know it's the permanent agenda.
Yes.
It's the security state. It's the bodies that control benefits and council housing and however many other elements you want to pick out of day-to-day society. These are the things that are in control of what we are trying to do, or trying to change, I should say, in some regard. Not whether or not we have Starmer or Rishi Sunak in control.
Well, the stream that we did a while ago, and I'll try and see if there's not audio bleeding through here. It's a stream we did, God, 2 years ago, more than 2 years ago now, when it came to the political switcheroo. And it's about this. It's about, in terms of immigration, the Labour Party adopting quite harsh, or what would be considered quite harsh, anti-immigration rhetoric. And they have done.
Well, they're already doing deportation, supposedly.
Well, what we're seeing is themselves trying to fit within this post-woke frame. And again, you can try and undercut it, you can try and study it narratively if you can see it coming. We've been so solid on this and we've been able to make such good predictions on this because, quite frankly, it's been obvious it's been obvious since I used that stupid video game font. it's that long ago. It's that long ago before you settled on a nice sans serif font. But I do digress here. But what we're also getting is just, I don't know, it's New Britain. Unless there's anything else you want to talk about in terms of hyper-reality. I'll leave some of the other notes there. That's just for me for later.
But I think the fundamental point there is that reality, in terms of how it's dealt with politically, must first come to terms with the hyper-reality before the reality itself.
Yes.
Which is a bit sort of circular in a wanky way to put it, but it doesn't matter what happens anymore. They will just make it seem as if something else has happened. And because no one can remember what happened last week, as long as for 5 or 6 days they can make something that looked like A happened actually be B, by the end of the week it doesn't matter that A happened because all everyone can remember is B. But anyway, It's New Britain time.
It's New Britain time, guys. They're actually doing the New Britain thing.
Do you
thing.
Think old Britain was smelly? Everything was run on coal and everyone had diphtheria. No more, because we've got New Britain.
Solar powered for your every need. We'll live off sunlight and port the entire world.
And port all our food from China.
Yes, because that's the economic zone. We're the liberal zone and we will do liberal things. Woo, New Britain! Woo! Anyway.
But as we sort of, once again, attempted to predict, and I think did so relatively well, given the fact that all the New Britain framework that was written by supposedly Gordon Brown well over a year and a bit ago now...
Was completely impenetrable in many ways.
Self-contradictory, incredibly confusing, and basically half-written. We still have basically managed to work out what half of what they were going to do within about the first year or so. And it's become rather obvious. They're going to gut local councils, which Reform and Homeland and all these new parties are just making all their victories in. Are they going to lose all these positions? Oh no!
Well, what's happening is that there, as the story says here, sorry, I'll actually read these, I'm flicking between them. Rainer to promise devolution by default in speech to local leaders. The Deputy Prime Minister will vow to push power out of Whitehall into the hands of people with skin in the game. What this is an attempt to gut local councils and create huge mega councils headed by Westminster bubble mayors, who will be centrally controlled via a council of region and nations. Think of it as 100 mini Holyrood assemblies, all wrapped up in 100 endless processes with ultimate decisions made from above. This is the first step in the New Britain constitutional reshaping. Devolution via centralisation. It's an amazing doublespeak here.
Well, there
we
is.
We have Rainer talking about devolution by default, and the BBC here talking about how MPs will abolish all of Lancashire's 15 different councils into one mega council. So if your small local area doesn't want to have things dumped on it, they'll be outvoted by the more populous area.
Right, I'm going to do something that's hopefully useful.
Yes.
Because I think we are... One of the big things with this, I think that we as Brits know and assume that a lot of people won't.
Yes.
There isn't really a national body for controlling local councils.
No, there isn't.
This doesn't exist.
No, the local council is supposed to be the local council.
And this is why, in some regards, people think that there's political change to be granted out of these positions, because in some regards, they operate with a level of independence. And furthermore, your demographic is so local and tight-knit that you can really sort of turn it into your own little fiefdom in some regards, which... white communities have tried and not really been allowed to get away with.
Yes.
More by police forces than anything else. And Muslim communities and Sikh communities, Jewish communities in Britain have done for years.
Yes.
However, the government has decided that, well, wouldn't it be great if we got rid of all these different little independent councils and we actually made them giant gerrymandered districts of 1 to 2 million people that all have a centrally controlled body, like federal entities.
We'll go over this in detail at some point because they've not brought out the full proposals yet and quite frankly, I don't want to jump the gun on it. But what is said already has made it clear that this will be compulsory.
Mm.
This is a compulsory process. Your council... will be abolished. At the same time, and to feed into our next little bit here, planning reforms will end development chaos, says Rainer. Housing Secretary Angela Innes has said overhauling planning rules to bypass local authorities will remove chaos and subjectedness from the system. We're seeing here that this all interlocks.
Mm.
It is a system to create a way to cut past the local authorities, to cut past any NIMBYism and infinity Bromalians, infinity buildings.
Yeah, it allows you to do local government from the centre by coming up with a uniform policy that fits as many of them as you can shoehorn in as possible.
It's about the infinite council state. It's about the minimum infrastructure guarantee that was in the New Britain document.
Mm.
Again, the infinite council state is a stream that we did in March 2022. Good Lord, that's nearly 3 years ago now. And it was actually a lot of people's first stream. A lot of people mentioned this stream to me. But what we're seeing is all interlocking here. It's all interlocking to create this situation where the last barrier to central government is removed in these areas and they will have, by decree of their mega council and by central government, infinity Bromalians dumped on them. We have again here, to go back to this narrative, this is really something, again, this is the fruit of what we talked about nearly 3 years ago. We talked about the housing fund and the billions, the multiple billions and the tracts of land, and part of it came from the land grab from the 2012 Olympics and all that. It's insane where all this like almost like eminent domained land came from. But Sadiq Khan's London Housing Fund may need bailout, Aldous has warned. Mayor's property development vehicle repeatedly missed payments on £300 million worth of debt.
That's not a problem. It's not that we don't have too many unfunded liabilities in Britain nowadays.
Again, taxpayers may need to bail out Sadiq Khan's London Housing Fund.
How can the taxpayers bail out something they already paid for?
Well, it's
at least in theory.
Yeah, it's a public-private partnership, but we'll see a lot more of this. I've kind of labelled these things to watch, but in 2024, 2025, we'll start to learn that this mass housing initiative that was put up by the previous government hasn't worked. They've spent immense amounts of money and built incredibly little. London sees 91% collapse in mayor-funded affordable housing starts. As we talked about, again, it's amazing. We talked about during the Infinite Council State stream, eventually the economics of this break down because you can no longer sell the units needed to scam people to create this social housing scam in which you have these luxury tower blocks that are 20% social housing.
Which means, really, the council that was supposed to only own 40% of the flats or units inside a building has to de facto own the whole thing because no one with any private interest would want to be in the other 60%.
It's a public-private partnership making deliberately failed construction projects that were designed to be bailed out to create social housing by the back door.
In 2024, a grand total of 528 GLA, Greater London Authority, affordable homes began construction in the capital between March and September. Data published on Tuesday also revealed of that number, 364 have appeared to be for social rent. So that's 160 odd properties just kind of sitting there, languishing, having cost possibly millions of pounds each to build.
There was all this land taken. It's just this massive money dumping scheme in which very little gets built for a lot of cost. And the end of it is infinite housing at infinite cost for infinite migrants.
That no one can actually live in because the buildings themselves can't be sold on.
There's all this talk of new towns. There's this talk of massive building. And the new towns project will be facilitated by these planning rule changes and by this changes to councils. You will only need the permission of the council, then it can be forced through, and all of this stuff interlocks. These are many different stories, but we see an emerging picture of the enabling of the kind of the last turbocharging of the Blairite government.
Yeah.
And I will say to people who say that we got things wrong about the Labour government, you've got till 2020. These people are in place until 2029. It does not matter if they are unpopular now. It does not matter if they lose the local elections because the local elections no longer matter. They're making them irrelevant. It doesn't matter. All that matters is if they retain the political moment when it comes to it in 2029. And when it comes to it in 2029, you will be told things have only got better. Well, and that's what we tried to tell people. It's just that it doesn't matter if things actually get better or not. You will be told they have gotten better.
And what we'll see as well, though, is that your alternative options, your backstops, your Farage, your Robert Jenricks, whoever's cool and edgy in the Tory party by the time we get to 2029, they will have agreed to all of this stuff. I mean, Farage himself has already agreed to some of the reforms and the establishment of a Council of Nations and Regions.
Yes.
Farage and both Tice have also agreed to the Assisted Dying Bill.
Yes.
They're not opposed to this stuff.
No, they're not at all.
So how can we even say in 2029 that those people who voted for all of this stuff will then, walk back on the last 5 years of what they've done by the time they get there? I doubt it.
Well, of course, this also interlocks with farming. I've not said much about farming recently because I did a piece called What Now for the Cow for the Substack, and the farming stuff has been overshadowed by the inheritance tax issue. I think the inheritance tax issue, despite it being extremely pressing, is a haggling technique. It is a way of creating that as the only story about UK farming.
When it's not about rewilding.
No.
It's not about the problem of food security in general. And furthermore,
well, I think that the inheritance tax issue will be used to extract compromises from farmers who have been economically inviable without state subsidy for the entire post-war period and therefore they're a jostling client group and they're not a rival castle.
Yes.
And that's the main point I get from the inheritance tax is that will be reversed at some point, I think.
Well, I wanted
but it will be reversed in exchange for concessions, specifically on green stuff.
Yes, and I think as well, though, and it's worth mentioning, and this is no attempt or slight at people who are working farmers, because I understand that they probably have one of the hardest jobs going at the end of the day, and they receive absolutely no recompense for it whatsoever. But many farmers are in a position where they are benefited financially by going along with rewilding schemes.
Yes.
And they have no choice in that. One aspect of this that could actually become quite interesting is that if people attempted to scrap these rewilding schemes, farmers would turn around and go, well, how am I meant to run my farm? My money does not come from producing food. It comes from being a caretaker and a stakeholder amongst the local environment. The inheritance tax thing is a terminal issue from them as individual business owners.
Yes.
But them being reorientated into being land managers as opposed to people who produce and provide food for profit is not talked about.
No, they and that is not even part of the debate. And it's already settled. It's already happened. They're quibbling about the implications of it, but as bleak as it sounds, the piece I wrote back in February and the food security stream we did, it's happened. All of the things you think are happening over the next 5 years, as we talked about when we did that whole Great Reset has already happened thing, it's all already happened. The quotas are in place. The animals are being killed. The livestock has been reduced. Land has been repurposed. It has already happened.
Can we go back to an old mantra that we've not used in a good while?
Yes.
If it is not revelation,
it's normalization.
Yes. And that's what we've experienced, as far as I'm aware, since about 2020, really. We are not engaging in the politics of revelation and fact-finding and truth and things coming out into the light. No. We're having the horrors that some of us have known about for decades in some capacities being revealed to us as normality, slowly but surely, through a drip feed, through the slop trough, through whatever avenue you get it.
How do we live in the political future? I think our biggest asset is the fact that we do not buy in.
No.
We do not buy in to anything at all. And I know that sounds like we're being political hipsters, but we don't. You cannot trust the information that comes out of the current elite and the current government of the UK and the current government of any Western nation. You cannot trust the figures because they, one, they suffer from the calculation problem, which means the planning, there's the whole thing about why planned economies don't work, but there's no incentive to tell the truth. And the ability to accurately measure things, like I said, they don't have it. The idea that we can measure GDP, that we can measure immigration objectively, is wrong.
We can design the ideal domicile for one of 80 million people so that it fits all 80 million people. Never going
to
happen.
Official statistics are, of course, subject to the whims and intention of the elite, but they are also just subject to the limits of reality. You cannot predict the future. And I know it's us talking about the political future here, but you cannot actually predict the political future. The reason we're able to
is because they have to tell you before they do it.
Yes, it's because that we live in an era of not only planned economics, but planned politics.
Mm.
There is a political plan that is put forward at the end of every year, but at the beginning of each year, basically, that tells you what the political paradigm will be over the next 1 to 5 years.
Mm.
That is how we live in the political future, because we are living in planned economies, planned societies with high degrees of control, and what they try and do and what reality is different, but what the narrative will be and what the framing will be, which is really what politics is about, it's a frame game, are agreed beforehand.
Mm.
But you trying to predict the political future by going through political statistics, by going through official numbers, doesn't work. Disregard all of this. All you can say is that it doesn't tell you anything. As I said, the economic growth will always be revised down because it's in their interest to make it look higher, and immigration numbers will always be revised up from lower face numbers because that benefits them too. The numbers are a lie. It doesn't make any sense. Do not quote the numbers. Do not be an empiricoid. Do not, as we do sometimes, we do quote the studies, but we always try to give the caveat that you cannot trust these numbers. You cannot trust what is being told to you. You cannot trust the fact that people, well, you know, people aren't that stupid. Surely someone would check these numbers. No.
They are that stupid.
People are this stupid. These tricks do work. Announcing growth and taking it back later, announcing low immigration numbers and pretty much doubling them is what happened with the 2022 numbers later. You know, 600,000 up to nearly a million in terms of net migration, in quotes. All of the jostling. You must remember that these horrible numbers that we quote are them leaning on the scales. This is what they will admit to. They are incentivized to do the opposite.
What they're telling me here in this first few paragraphs is that really their ability to calculate immigration, at least if we're to take this at face value and not presume that the first number that was given as lower was given for framing or rhetorical reasons, which, let's be honest, it probably was. But are we to believe that they've got a 50% margin of error? That it could be 600,000 people plus or minus 300,000 or more closer, 750,000 plus or minus 150,000 people either way. That's quite a considerable large town, that.
Yes,
you think you would know.
It is a 50% margin of error. And why? Well, if it's 872,000, why can't it be 1.2 million? Why can't it be 50% again?
Why can't Britain have 100 million people in it?
Yes. If the numbers are this cooked, and again, we talked about this during our population collapse stream and during the fact that you can't really trust population numbers at all. Some of the foundational data of the world that we live in, of how you think about your nation, how you think about yourself, and how you think about politics, come from people who hate you and are incentivized to lie to you.
Yep.
And we're not going to sit here and tell you to put a tinfoil hat on and believe the opposite of everything, because that tells you nothing as well. It's that you can disregard many of these things. And what we do is, and where we're able to make such, in many cases, accurate predictions, is that we know that the political system has very long time horizons. We know that there are permanent projects in places. We know that nothing ever really happens. We know that nothing ever really changes. And when it does change, you'll know about it. That's really how you exist in political future. It's you keep calm and you remember your training. Again, the neo-neocon era is here, and we shall see increasingly sane leftism pushes the alternative form of politics as people tire of the reheated boomercon din that is the extended universe of MAGA. All of the people, all the young people who are politically engaged, in quotes, will be politically worn out by the end of the Trump administration, and by the end of whatever Farage government may or may not appear. It will be an exercise in humiliating those people who once again bought into a system that only ever changes the colour of the veneer over it. It does not change the contents. Again, it's such a basic thing to say to people, but look, they don't fire the entire civil service when the government changes. The work they were doing the day before the election and the work they do the day after the election is generally contiguous. These are the facts. Remember your training. Keep calm. Remember your training. Electoral politics isn't real. A lot of it is just, it's just like deprogramming people. It's so simple. What appears to be happening is happening. Who appears to be in power, if you look at it, is in power. If you look at it properly, the visible politicians are simply ticking boxes. And it looks like that because it's true. And really, we are able to exist in the political future because we understand the political present.
Yes.
And we are stuck in a frozen paradigm that the framing of which changes, but the reality of which doesn't.
See, really, if it was up to me, in an ideal world, I wouldn't have re-education camps. I would have de-education camps where terrible foods, soft drinks and water heavily sort of put through with lead and mercury would be used to eradicate most people's ability to like abstract. And I think you'd have half of this solved. That's a matter for another day. I've not got much else to add, so I'm just going to say I hope everyone that's in the chat or is watching this as a VOD has a very Merry Christmas.
I've got a couple more of donations here to read as well. I will double check and make. Don't worry, guys. Before we go, we will make sure that all your donations are read out. Do not panic, those of you who. God, why won't that I hate the YouTube back end, by the way.
But yes, have a very Merry Christmas. Have a Happy New Year. And please, for the love of God, do not spend the holidays talking with your family about politics. Both you and them deserve better.
Yes, yes, they do. I'll go through. Thank you for the £5 there, Coney, current year. I do think there's a silver lining regarding the torrent of... do you think there's a silver lining regarding the torrent of slop online? The sheer amount of it helps push people offline into the real world. Actually, no, all it does is mean they can exist in the trough all day.
Yeah, what's the silver lining to South Park that you find it funny?
terrible. And thank you to those who donated by the Ko-fi. I can't see messages here, but thank you to... I have seen the donations. Thank you to the person who donated the £12. If you left the message, it's not showing it to me, and I'll read that next time if you did. But I have seen it, and thank you.
Mr. Habermas is just quickly asking in the chat about Nomos stuff. Still pretty up in the air, gotta be honest.
I'm afraid hopefully, hopefully.
By some point next year, we will be able to, like... one, sort of explain to people what the hell has happened for the last 18 months without sounding like some sort of awful sob story. And two, we can give you more positive information about what we might be organising ourselves. Other than that, I don't think we've got much else to add.
Not really. What I'll do is I'll put the... I don't actually have an end song sorted today. I'll actually just leave you...
Do we just do our own? Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Thank you for watching the stream. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.